Mud Podcast presents.
We surf the web each night, data flows like light. Tech mud in our sights. Paranoia takes flight.
This is Tech Mud right here on KMud, where we talk about technology, the good, the bad, and maybe the semi-paranoid. And as always, we're here to answer or try to answer your tech-related questions. I'm your host, Garth, and I'm joined by Rick. Rick, how are you doing?
Hello, Garth. Good, buddy. How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Like we got a full show this evening.
We sure do. Yeah, there's a lot. We'll just take turns switching between those, all those good stuff.
We'll be opening up the lines at half past the hour, 707-923-3911. I think something's going on with my texting number, so I'm not going to give that out just in case it just goes nowhere, but feel free to call in with your questions, comments, or anything sort of tech related.
Cool. Well, Garth, why don't you start off with the news and let's see what's new.
Well, I don't have, I usually try to start with local news, but I don't have a huge amount this month in tech land in Humboldt Mendo. Trinity has not been on my radar as much. Nothing super new. I did get a Gen 3 Starlink to use at different events, so
really
I'll be playing with that here in the near
future. Did you have to buy it, or was it donated for testing?
No, I purchased it. I'll end up renting it out to different events.
Awesome.
They one thing, and I'll let you know how this works. They have a mobile roaming plan now, which you can pause and unpause, but the roaming plan is slower. It's deprioritized. So if there's a lot of other Starlinks in the air in your little area, if they're not roaming, they get priority over you. And from what I'm told, or what I'm told on the internet, you can just kind of cancel service and then start it back up because there's not really used to be a long waiting list. Now it's all open, and I bought a refurbished kit from Starlink directly, which was it was $3.99, and a little shipping. So it's
You know, but it's
getting
so cool the
less.
way they set that up because it, you know, back in the day, I remember installing satellite internet. It was a pain in the butt. You know, you
Yeah,
have to
you had
go
to
up
have a
and.
professional installer sometimes, or they
Oh,
wouldn't allow
yeah.
you to
Well,
do
you
it
had to
yourself.
align the dish. You had to like make sure that the relative azimuth, you know, I mean, not only was it pointed at the satellite, but you had to twist it so that the it was aligned to the dish so that transmit receiving. And God, with Starlink, you just press the button, it does its thing.
Well, and it's interesting, they're making it lighter and lighter. So Gen 1 was the heaviest, the round dish. Gen 2 had the motors that pointed itself, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But this Gen 3, it just sits there and you mount it on a pole or put it on the ground and then launch a phone app and then you just kind of move it left or right a little bit and call it good.
Oh, you have
So
to it physically the app
you
tows you
do, it
out of,
doesn't
you
have
know.
motors built in not to the Gen 3, probably to save money, I'm
Wow.
guessing. But
Well,
it is
there's a lot of cool
interesting.
technology with antennas and how they've
Oh, it's
we've turned the it's amazing. They
they did
self-align by
they
how they use software radio. So it can actually say, okay, I want the string to the left more. So it software does that. It doesn't need a
Yeah, no,
physical pointing.
it's pretty crazy. They have a
That's
mini
pretty
one they
cool.
just announced, which didn't make my news list, but I just read that there's a mini one the size of an iPad,
Oh,
mini
wow.
Starlink dish, and it only is capable of 100 down at most. But for some situations, maybe that's just perfect for somebody. The main
Yeah.
problem with Starlink I've run into is a lot of people build their houses so they have a southern-facing view. And Starlink needs a northwesterly view of the sky
From
to
your
work
location,
well.
yeah.
Yeah, so that can be an issue. Anyway, yeah, well, I'll let you know how that goes. Maybe next show here. Apple's here's a name from the past. Apple's battery supplier TDK. Yes, that TDK, the makers of cassette tapes and CDs,
Wow.
has made a big breakthrough in battery technology, which is kind of
That's
cool.
cool.
That's it's but it's only of a certain size. It's going to be they can't manufacture these new style batteries for anything much bigger than a smart watch yet.
But it has
But
a density, right, of like 1,000 watts per joule for 1 liter. So that's, I
yeah,
mean, if they did get it there.
and I looked up the because it's the difference between like a solid state battery and a liquid battery, right?
Right.
And I looked up the difference, and I guess most smartwatch batteries are about they have a capacity of like I'll just say 400, and this could be 1,000 basically. So
Right.
that's
It's
a
not 100
significant.
times, but it's still close, you know,
Yeah,
it's
it's getting
definitely
there.
better. Yeah.
Yeah,
It's
no.
amazing. Yeah, isn't that cool, man? We're
Battery technology, I'm hoping battery technology gets better and better. I'm starting to think about replacing UPS's uninterruptible power supplies that some people use on their desktop computers. I've started thinking about replacing the lithium ion batteries in some of mine with the lithium ion phosphate batteries that are available because they're available and they're getting lower in price, and they don't you can drain them all the way and charge them back up without an issue. Whereas these sealed lead acid batteries, I mean, after a humble winter, it's almost like you got to replace your UPS, you know? It's
Well, I just, you know, I mean that sounds great, but unless you introduce some electronics in there, it's kind of dangerous, right? Because lithium, the way we charge a lithium battery versus charging a lead acid is quite different. And that's what makes lithiums, you know, that you have to really monitor. Yeah,
once I looked at have their own charge controls built into them, basically. They have a charge controller built in. So that.
Well, yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, you know, you're talking about living out there. You know, solar panels in the U.S., in California, finally reached the peak where we had 100% power from solar, or at least from, well, probably wind too. And it met the demand for California. Now, grant you, this is not ideal, whereas we don't have enough resources to store it. But it also happened in France too. They had an effect where it went negative. So basically, you didn't have to pay for power. Yeah. Because there was a drop in demand, and you have all this other stuff.
Well, I wish I didn't have to pay for power.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading this, and it sounds like for 55 days in a row, electricity from solar, wind, and water exceeded the demand of all of California, which is pretty cool. That's good. It shows you were on the right path. Will we see a discount from PG&E? No, probably not.
But in fact, it's going the other way. You know, instead of paying you money back when you make the power, they're now charging you for the luxury of having solar panels on your roof. And I know that communities like in Shasta County and Redding specifically, because they're their own little utility, instead they don't use PG&E.
Yeah.
They're making people pay, I think it's like $150 if you have solar per month. And then the idea is maybe you make enough energy to, you know, make it back. But it is kind of weird how we're getting there, and then they turn around and find ways of squeezing it.
Yeah, anyway. They change the rules of the game. I hope that a lot of I know that when people are doing grid ties now, they're getting paid a lot less by the utility company. I don't know. Maybe somebody knows out there, but I think the people that got in early are still grandfathered into the better deal. But I don't know.
Point is, they're squeezing it, and you know, everyone knew this would be a problem. I think the real long term solution will be, you know, as battery technology advances and we can store extra harnessed energy, because the example in France, which wasn't on our cheat list, but it just came up. They actually had their nuclear plants, some of them shut down or at least back off, because they had too much energy and there's no batteries to harness, you know, to house that extra energy when you go over. So hopefully we'll get closer to that, but it is I guess it's promising.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's positive. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. It definitely is positive.
There's some smart researchers figured out there's a secret smart home radio in a lot of new Apple devices, like Macs, like your laptop, iPads, like iPad Pros, iMacs, even the new M3s. And they discovered this by looking at the FCC documents, because you're required as a manufacturer to disclose all the radios or, you know, anything that might interfere with something else.
Right.
In your filings, because Apple didn't tell us about this, but it appears to be to have to work with Thread, which is sort of their own wireless protocol for smart home standards.
I think that's a part of there's this kind of thing that's being pushed called Matter, which is a development for smart home technology, so that you can integrate everything together.
Is it trying to get everybody sort of on the same page rather than having all these different protocols and other things?
Right. So Matter is kind of coming out there. It is sort of open source, and it's, you know, it has collaborators. So, you know, Apple and other companies have all been part of the committee and everything that makes decisions. So, but it is interesting that, you know, you buy a device and there's a secret radio inboard, you know, I mean, which... yeah.
Good, I mean, I wouldn't expect anything less. I used to have a phone. It was quite a while ago when you still could plug headphones into your phone, but it had an FM transmitter in it, just for FM radio. And I always found that nice.
Transmitter?
I'm sorry, I misspoke. It was a receiving
receiver,
so that I could use an app and not not go through the internet, but actually pick up local radio stations.
Which, yeah, and I still have phones that have, you know, because I've kept my old phones and I use them just like that. I have one that I keep at my bedside that I use as my radio. You know, it has, the, you know, it's the old style with the jack and has a radio receiver. They kind of did away with it in the new phones. And then obviously you can't plug in a jack anymore. You know, you have
there is a Motorola phone. Some of the Motorolas, and I think maybe one other company still have normal like headphone jacks. But
right.
And we may see that come back. Maybe not. I mean, there was that whole new right to repair standard that's going to take effect in Europe in the next year. So we'll see. But yeah, that's secret radio cool. in all your devices, probably harmless, just wants to connect you to your, you know, home pods and other technology. It's probably just lying dormant there. Could it be used for anything else? Well,
that's the time that's when it bugs me, because, you know, as we move forward and we keep automating everything, you know, we want, oh God, it's great to have something connected. And this in turn means that if you don't use it, well, it might be used by a hacker or someone who knows that it's there. And the FM radio receivers, I think, were something like that. A lot of phones had that and people didn't know about it. And now, you know, I mean, I think people get a little overboard because, you know, there's like recently Oral-B had a an Alexis toothbrush, you know, so it was connected to your Alexis. And while you're brushing your teeth, oh, you're not far from Alexa, because you can
feel like I'm connected to Amazon right now.
Yeah. It knows when you're cleaning your teeth. And, you know, I mean, there's a element of like, it's kind of cool. Like, okay, it plays a tune, so you know how long the brush. I like that aspect, but I don't like the aspect. But what's recently happened is Oral-B bricked a bunch of these. And so it created this environment where you paid $230 for this really cool toothbrush, probably for your kid, if not for you. And if you had connected it back then, great, it still works. But unfortunately, they made it impossible to connect a new toothbrush.
So does the toothbrush actually stop working, or is it just not
connected? Well, no, the toothbrush still works. The base had a built-in Alexa, so it's basically that microphone speaker thing going on.
And the base itself is the Alexa,
The base itself becomes an Alexa, you know, and so while you're brushing, you know, it's making sounds or doing whatever, which is, I guess, kind of cool. I mean, it shows the craziness of our society.
I'm a long ways from paying $230 for an Alexa toothbrush, I think.
Exactly. I mean, you know, for that matter, you can get a $30 Alexa and put it in the bathroom. Call it good.
Exactly.
You know? You know what I mean? But anyway, but what's the catch is that, you know, it's no longer going to be able to be installed. So it creates a catch 22. And so if you see these come on deal, folks, don't buy it. You know,
because they're still trying to sell the old stock.
And it still works as a toothbrush. It still has some features that you can use through your phone. It's not like it totally crippled it, but the main selling feature was that it was tied to Alexa, and that no longer, you won't be able to install it. So,
They've got a new one out there that they're claiming. It has AI position detection that tracks where you brush across all three surfaces of your teeth. Wow. And it's only $400. So, you know.
That's cool. A better one. Yeah, exactly. I think we go, you know, again, we get a little carried away because, you know, you got a device like that, you set it up so it's on the internet, and then all of a sudden it's not supported. So now it becomes a potential hacker point, you know what I mean, where they can, you know, seize some control because it is a computer on the internet.
Yeah, I'm definitely a big advocate of for any of these weird devices, all this IoT stuff and anything that is not just my standard computer and phone and stuff. I tend to like to put on a separate network or separate Wi-Fi network, which not every consumer is capable of.
Use the guest network feature of your router a separate network or
it's very
router.
I mean, if it doesn't actually, these days, a lot of the routers make it pretty easy to do to have a little guest network, and you can just put that stuff on it. Yeah,
But you know what? It takes a lot of extra work. It takes a certain amount of expertise. It's really ridiculous, you know. And anyway, you know, given that, you know, I wanted to mention something about recycling because
let me just remind people before you get to that, let me just remind people that they're listening to Tech Mud right here on K-Mud with Garth and Rick. We'll open up the phone lines around 7:30, 923-3911. And Larry, our trusty engineer, and thank you, Larry, for being there. We'll answer the phone and get you on the air with us. So recycling, what about recycling?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I mean, I've complained about the way we handle electronics. And when big companies sell you something and then they give it a life expectancy. So, you know, 3 years, that phone is worthless or whatever. You have to recycle it. You got to throw it away. But it, you know, goes deeper because a lot of people, you know, recycle stuff. And if you look at something that's a plastic container, usually if it's any food or content in it, it has a little recycling symbol on the bottom or underneath. And you could say, oh, this is recyclable, so I better put it in my bin, yeah. You know. But it's kind of a joke.
I totally agree.
One of the things that recently happened, specifically in Trinity, the Bigfoot Recycling stopped. It shedded a bunch of its services, and it's went down to a bare minimum. So if you live in that area, you can't recycle your general drinking plastics. Now, mind you, out of the recycles that people recycle, at maximum 9% make it to a recycler, but it's more like 4-3%.
A lot of it's wish cycling, even if it has symbol.
The whole concept of recycling is just like a try to make you feel good because the industry wanted to give you a reason to keep using their products. So yeah. it's kind of a joke. And then this is what I found out when I looked into what was going on. It's not quite tech, but it does hinder around this idea that, okay, so you go, you buy something and you pay that 10 cents for the container. Now, normally when you were taking it back to that recycler, you were getting it by weight. So you paid 10 cents. You're lucky to get 2 cents, you know, for the unit.
Yeah, already you're not getting the full amount back. Yeah,
you're not getting the full amount. Now, they're required to take, you know, 50 items or something like that. A lot of them would hem and haw if you gave them over 10. And then California, in the beginning of this year, said, okay, those cardboard wine containers. I know those people who own an apple don't drink that kind of wine. But the idea is that cardboard container is now worth 25 cents. So that put a huge burden on the recycler because he can't. You know, it's no longer just plastic you can crush up. And years ago, what they were doing is they were sending it to Mexico. Mexico finally said no. Then we started shipping it to China. Then China said no. And now all of a sudden, the bottom has dropped out from that being super, super profitable. And what's happening is they're hoping that they can make AI recycling bots. So you go to your grocery store and there'll be like a kiosk and you stick your recycling in and it has AI, so it can say, oh, that's this kind of plastic. Mm-hmm. I can sort it out. So it pre-sorts it. But that hasn't happened. It's a pipe dream. What I found out, which is really interesting, the way California in particular made its law for recycling, is that if you have a store that makes over $2 million a year, they have to take back the recycling, okay, if there's not a recycling center within a half a mile. However, if they don't, they're charged $100 a day.
And they just pay that. Yeah.
They just pay it. Yeah. It's much simpler to just pay the $100 a day. So, you know, this is all a joke because when you look at how much plastic we as a nation consume,
ridiculous.
You know, the stuff we drink out of, it's really just a feel good to make you think you're recycling. And as most people, they have a recycling thing that they have to pay for on their, you know, garbage bill, even though they may or may not use it. So it's just one thing after another to try to squeeze money out of people, try to make them feel good because they're putting something in the plastic bin. When in reality, when you mix a shampoo bottle with a drinking, you know, or whatever, a vodka bottle for that matter, you know, these things are different plastics, you know, and they have to be sorted. And so most of it ends up in the landfill.
Yeah. In Northern Humboldt here, we have a facility out in Samoa there that sorts through all your recycling materials that you've put in your your plastic bucket there that are not separated. But a lot of it never goes anywhere. You're right. And a lot of it gets contaminated. Like, you know, if your drink thing spills on your cardboard, that cardboard isn't going to be recycled. It'll just be put in the landfill. So.
Yeah, that's right. You know, like pizza boxes from, you know, I think Domino's say recycle this box. But when you look at your local recycler, they don't want a box that's been contaminated with oils and greases.
Yeah,
so it's a catch 22. It's a feel good.
In the tech land, I have seen in other countries, and I don't think this solves the end problem, but it allows the consumer to recycle stuff. I've seen automated, I don't want to say they're AI, but they're machines you put your bottles or plastic into, and it does scan it and weigh it and it checks it out. And then it pays you out of the machine for it. So
this is what I think California is hoping to go to. But, you know, it's kind of a joke. Like, we passed a law about recycling plastic bags, and it didn't work.
And you know, they made some industrial plastic bags.
That's right. And the old bags would dissolve quite nicely. Now, grant you, it's putting microplastics in the thing, but it dissolves quite well. The new ones don't. And now they're getting ready to pass a law, which my conversations with the California recycling people says it looks like it's going to pass. So we're not going to see plastic bags at stores in the near future, because they were charging you 10 cents. The store was keeping the money, and, you know, and it's like this weird, you know, it's just a comedy of things. And the solution to all this is really what it comes down to. It needs to be pushed back on the manufacturers. If they sell you something, whether it's an iPhone or a, you know, container of any kind, they kind of need the auspice of taking it back and dealing with it, you know, and unfortunately we haven't gone that path. And it's just some folks.
I've noticed with phones, I think, I bought a Google phone, or something from the Google store, and it was a phone, and the package on it was like, hey, you want to recycle your old phone, put it in this box we sent you and send it back to us and we'll take care of it for you.
Yeah, but Apple does something like that. And, you know, I've seen some really good videos where they have an automated plant that strips the phone apart and does all this. But there's still this kind of concept that, you know, we've become such a I want it now disposable attitude.
Yeah, can it last forever? I mean, this goes way beyond tech, of course, but
it does. The tech part of it is
the consumerism of it all, because a big part of the American economy is based on growth of the companies and of consumer spending every quarter.
They're hoping to use AI and other technologies to really help with the sorting. They just haven't got there yet. So I don't know. I think there's other fish to fry. Microsoft has been on my list a little bit lately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Microsoft is that Microsoft retreated a little bit recently.
Yeah. It's sort of like Total Recall, but in Microsoft.
Yeah. Terms. So Recall, it was okay. And I can see what they were doing here. I actually listened to some podcasts about it, but I can see their thought process. And they were going to release this on a certain. They're going to release a whole line of laptops. I forget what their Copilot is the name of their version of AI. And they were going to release this thing that is so helpful for you as a consumer using your computer. It would just take a picture of your screen every few seconds, actually, maybe, you know, every 5-10 seconds. And it would store it locally. It wouldn't upload it to Microsoft or anybody else. It would just store it locally on your computer, and then your local AI, the Copilot, would help you when you typed in something. It would be like, oh hey, you know, did what was I saw a green dress earlier, where did I see that at? And it would look back through all those pictures and be like, oh well, it was right over here on this website. Super helpful, right?
Well, I think we've gotten away from it being super helpful, because it's really about, you know, Microsoft and the people who want to know what you're up to having a database of stuff they can get into.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Well, and they claim it's not uploaded to Microsoft, and it's only the local little AI will use it, and they're not going to take it. Quickly, and this was just kind of proposed. It was showed to some developers. They quickly found out they could. Supposedly, you'd have to have administrative access of the computer to access this database of pictures, but you know that's pretty easy to do. There's all sorts of bugs and things that can elevate privileges on your local computer. And then Microsoft said, "Oh no, we're going to encrypt it. We'll encrypt it and we'll make you sign in with their Microsoft Hello or whatever it's called. It's, you know, you have to like biometrically authenticate yourself in order to get to this database." And I think they were kind of thinking about, because this goes to AI and using a lot of like electricity and power when the AI is trying to search everywhere for everything, like, you know, like ChatGPT is searching its whole entire database to draw you a picture. Whereas the little like localized AI could be trained only on your personal data set and not use so much. So I can kind of see where they were going, but it is a security nightmare. I mean, passwords, it banking is. Information, all these pictures. If you get into that database, it's all there, right?
Well, no, you know, and hackers actually did break into it and they figured out how to see it, and it wasn't being encrypted the way Microsoft said it was. You know, it's just accessing it. But, you know, Microsoft has had recently they've really had a lot of crap that, you know, has come down. They're like a security nightmare. And even the government is, you know, approaching them and putting them on the hot seat because they have a bunch of things that have Microsoft products on it. And again, I think we're talking about the big problem is that big corporations start wheeling out these projects. And, you know, Garth, between me and you, I don't need my computer recording everything I do because I'm such a lame brain. I can't remember what it was and go back and see it.
Yeah, I think I'll take my own notes. Thanks.
No, yeah, exactly. This is really about them, you know, wanting to have this access to know what you're up to. I mean, it is kind of a bizarre concept, but even in Windows 95.
You broke up there a little bit. Microsoft heard that you were talking about them.
Yeah. Well, anyway, all your icons would have to refresh on your screen. And it was because back then they would collect the database of what you've installed and what you're using. And again, you know, it really makes me question the legitimacy. And hopefully the government will get something out of them. But I got a feeling, you know, it's like, in a way, here's Microsoft saying, oh, we did this for the consumer. Well, they're probably doing it for government companies, you know, three-letter companies. Yeah. And yet, at the same time, you know, we put this dog and pony show and says, oh, no.
And there is a good – I have actually a point about the government and stuff on that. But with Microsoft – so they did roll that back. They said at first they were going to release it with this whole new line of laptops. And they're like, okay, you're right. Maybe it's not ready for prime time, especially since they were just talking to, like, Congress about how they were going to step up security and make sure everything was good with their operating system. And now they're going to only release it to the people that have signed up for like the beta, like the preview products from Microsoft, and they'll get to guinea pig it out there.
I'm sorry, I still feel like, you know, it's kind of an invasion of privacy. You know, when Windows 10 came out, it was already one of the biggest data gatherers of your activity. 11 took it to the next level, and now it's not enough. They have to have a screenshot of what you're doing every few seconds. So I, it's not just Microsoft, you know, like here's a great example. And then we'll go on to the next kind of idea. I have a phone that's an old Google phone to which I use as a FM radio at my bedside. I don't do anything else with it. It's strictly to be an FM radio. Well, okay. So that's all I do with it. Eventually, the phone starts whining at me that it's out of memory because it's been recording things, whether it's recording, you know, audio or just recording activity. And so eventually it ran out of memory. And yet the radio still works. I'm not playing with apps. I'm not doing anything. There's really no fair explanation for it to run out of memory. Now, if I was installing stuff, great. So this is the world we live in, you know, where we're told, okay, yeah, it's for your benefit. But in reality, you know, try to go back and see what it recorded. Good luck with that, you know, unless you're a hacker.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Dig in deep there. One quick thing about Microsoft. They for I think more than a decade have had a deal with our government and maybe others actually as well, that the government has full access to the source code for Microsoft products, for Windows specifically. Yeah. So if the government wanted to do something about security, though it's probably the opposite, they could hire people to dig into it. And, you know,
they do. They use India and they have them do a bunch of black ops work. And that's the way it's been for years.
Yeah.
You know, so they know about a lot of those vulnerabilities.
The zero days things, but they're not, it's not, they use
don't
it for their
disclose
own.
It. Yeah. They don't disclose it. And then finally someone stumbles on it. And so then, okay, that particular channel or line has been locked up. Go to the, you know, use the next one. So I'm sorry. I'm a little down, you know, Apple and Microsoft, both these big corporations are egregious on how they make us recycle products and how they are collecting data on all the users. And I feel like it's an invasion of privacy. It's really that simple. So
this is Tech Mud right here on KMud. I'm Garth and I'm chatting with Rick, and it looks like we have a caller.
Excellent.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
I had a question regarding my old HP laptop. It's currently running on the Windows 7, and I was wondering, do you think it's worth upgrading, or should I just throw it in the junk box and buy a new one?
Well, I'm a big, it depends on a lot of things. Do you know, does it have a solid state, and like how much RAM it has, stuff like that?
I'm not sure. I know it runs the Pentium.
First thing, don't upgrade it because, you know, and if you can, don't connect to the internet with it. If you use it as a tool, fantastic. But if you're using it as something, I would say you're going to have to either A, get a new computer because it's just not going to have the resources to handle. And Microsoft has dropped Windows 7, you know, I mean, so, you know, so, if you were maybe at 10, you know, maybe. Because they extended it a little bit.
But. It might have 8 running now. I can't remember. I think it might.
Well, 8's worse. 8's worse than 7. I hate to say it. 8 was a crappy design. 8 tries to make it like a phone, and it's not a phone. You know, it wants to make it all icons. It was crap.
Yeah, every time I try to get in there, it's always saying to upgrade it and this and that.
Yeah, it's probably not capable of running Windows 10 very well. If it's there's a couple things you can check on, but if it's too old, if it's over 10 years, I mean, some people want to keep the thing they want and they want to just keep upgrading it, and that's fine. It's just that you may end up spending more money on it than it's really worth.
You can do what I do. I go to a Linux distro that I boot from USB. So I'm using an old laptop that would not make the grade to 10, but it's quite useful to me the way I have it, you know, and I'm running Linux. I'm not running Microsoft anymore.
And it's a good word processor.
If you want to keep it offline and just use it for certain projects, that's totally good. And actually it's pretty easy to get a little Linux thing like Rick is talking about. And that will actually make it capable of going online, and it'll look very similar to, you know, if you use Firefox as a web browser, you can, you know.
What does something like that cost?
Linux is technically free. You just need to get a USB stick or something.
Or a USB drive, but it'll run really, I mean, not a USB drive, a CD of it. It'll run a lot slower, but those are your two options. Yeah, and you can install it, even though at this point, I would almost recommend just doing the USB drive or the or the CD, because then when you reboot it, you're getting a fresh reboot. I get about 10 days before I have to reboot my computer because it's always connected to the internet and it gets invaded by the internet.
I hardly ever hook it up.
Cool.
Yeah.
I guess what is a decent unit costing these days? Like something up to standards, not like a real fancy one, but
you can get a refurbished computer that still has a full year warranty on it for It depends on the quality, but a good quality would be in the $300 range or something.
Yeah, yeah, $300-$400. Yeah. You can go to Walmart.com and get a computer.
I don't believe in supporting Walmart.com, but you know.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, you know, there are $300, $400 computer laptops, yeah. And I would avoid desktops.
Okay, thank you. Got a little noise going somewhere in the background.
Yeah, no worries. But yeah, there's lots of different options out there. And right. Sometimes the old computers are still upgradable, but it sounds like yours is kind of on the other end there.
Still works. But, yeah. Good. Just yeah. Simple stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, really you simple. Can do what I do. I have an XP machine that I use for XP. I never let it get connected to the Ethernet or the internet. Mm-hmm. I use it because I have my 3D CAD programs on it. And they run my 3D printers. And so when I need to build something, I boot to that computer. I run that computer. But it does limit me because now I'm kind of locked in that day and time. However, like in your case, you're just using it for word processing. So what? You don't need a new fancy, you know, computer.
Yeah.
You can get on Google with it. But you're saying that might be bad. It might corrupt it.
I think that if you're not running a current version of Microsoft or whatever, even Linux, you want to kind of run a higher version, you have vulnerabilities. I run Linux on an old computer that was originally designed for XP. I get great results from it. I can do all my work. However, I leave it on 24/7. I get about 10 days before it bogs down because it gets stuff loaded into memory that's not my friend. And I reboot it. I'm back up in the running again, and, you know, it'll happen again. And
generally,
I'm just
Windows
used to
7
it.
Will sort of work for the internet, but it's very vulnerable.
They don't support it, so it's vulnerable.
I mean, that's the whole but problem. It works. Like, what I'm saying, Rick, is that Firefox you can display Google and do a search, you know.
You can, but your machine will be infected because it's not getting updates. So, you know, yes, it works, but. Do you want it to be part of some botnet or whatever?
Not really.
You know, especially with Windows, it stores so much on the hard drive that once it gets on there, it's hard to get off.
It's like we got another caller waiting here. Right.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. This is Tech Mud right here on KMUD. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I had another Microsoft-related question, or maybe it's just my hardware, but I've been experiencing when I type certain buttons on the keyboard, they'll you know, basically put doublets onto like I was trying to sign in, you know, my password on my computer to log in, and I basically couldn't because it was you know, putting two letters in for every one I was
That's
trying to do on just certain on one letter specifically. But then so I finally gave up and, you know, went away for work for a few days and then came back and tried it again today. And today it's not the letter that was plaguing me before. Now it's like two other characters that are doing the same thing. And, you know, it just makes me...
There's an easy way that that's probably hardware, but there's an easy way to test, even if it's a laptop. Just get an external USB keyboard and plug it in and see if it does the same thing.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, any settings to use the external keyboard?
You buy a USB keyboard, you plug it into your USB, it'll get auto-detected, and you have two keyboards now. And then try typing the same thing. And if it does what you're describing on the USB keyboard, then you got a software issue or a, you know, malware issue. If it doesn't, then you just got a failing keyboard. Because that's a real common, what you described is exactly one of the, either the key doesn't work or it works and causes this weird jump in character.
Like I had a keyboard where I hit one letter and it typed the three around it, you know, so
All right, cool. That's hopefully what's going on. I thought maybe it was Microsoft updates messing with me, trying to push me to go buy an
computer. You never know.
It could be, but you know, for about $5 you can go on eBay and buy a USB keyboard, you know, or cheaper. And you could probably find one if you go visit Garth's place, you know. I mean, it's just the idea is that try an external keyboard. and see if you have the same bouncing problem, because keyboard bouncing is one of the more common keyboard failures.
It's also sometimes just dirt or dust buildup sometimes in between the keys too. So just blowing out the keyboard or cleaning it off really well sometimes solves that.
But the way that they do the micro buttons, it's hard to clean.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great, and I'll try that. And I suspect maybe that'll take care of the problem. I had a second question, and it's related to, well, kind of what you guys were just talking about, working offline on a separate computer,
uh-huh.
You know, like the CAD work you were talking about. Rick. But if you're transferring, I mean, you need those files to go somewhere else. You have to pull those off on a USB stick or some other way.
One way.
Then aren't you potentially still at risk of infecting your computer when you plug in your USB stick or something into it?
You're absolutely right. The potential for, you know, like the Susnik virus lived on USB things. It spread from computer to computer. Once it gets on, it keeps spreading, so everything you plugged in gets infected. So potentially you're right. However, like what I do in my case, I blindside the computer from – I still let it connect to my local network because I want to transfer things and do things, and I want to access, you know, stuff on the network. So what I do is I blindside it from getting on the internet by misconfiguring its internet connection on purpose. So it gets dumb. So, yes, the answer to your question is potentially yes. However, you got to choose the best of evils. If you go and connect it to the internet, then there is a higher probability, especially if it's an old computer, to get infected because it's not getting updates. So at that point, and even the updates from Microsoft, I mean, Apple's been notorious for making updates that really cripple old devices so that you just get so frustrated you buy a new one. So
absolutely.
Anyway, answer to your question,
okay.
There is that ability.
Can I ask one more quick one?
Sure.
If I, you know, have my computer I use mostly for work type of thing, and I have a separate tablet that connects to the same network, you know, internal domestic network,
is
if I am more carefree about connecting to websites and so forth that might not be so secure, is that putting my work kind of computer at risk?
Perhaps.
It is the level. Yeah, it depends on the level you want to dig into, exactly.
But no, the level of the hacks and stuff really does do that. You get one computer on your network infected, and it spreads to other computers on the same network.
So depending on the tablet's also a different operating system, but, you know,
I don't connect the tablet and the computer together other than they use the same wireless network.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
again, it's possible. I think
anything's possible when it comes to hacking. I wouldn't be too concerned about that. If I'd be more concerned, you're definitely the internet provider and places you go are going to know that your work computer is accessing sites and another device is accessing sites. So that part's, you know,
corrupting with viruses.
Let me pitch you one problem. Like I use eBay a lot, and the eBay itself is a bad guy. Okay. They do all kinds of weird stuff that gets on my computer and it tries to spread on the network. I mean, I'm just going to eBay. I feel like it's a trusted site. Well, I got news for you. They're using, apparently it's their justification because they want to make sure you're not a hacker, but it spreads. So
we do have a third caller waiting, but
okay, I'll get off. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you, bro.
To quickly address that, if I look at my own habits and usage, I mean, I guess it depends on what sites you consider like insecure. I use a work computer. I don't have a work and personal computer difference here in the house. I'm using one for both. I have phones, tablets. They're all connected to the same network. So just depends on...
You know, Garth, you know me. I've been running Linux for a long time, and I've caught all these things trying to call home the mama, and I'm blocking them left and right. And one of the patterns I see happening is when it can't connect on the internet, because I block the IP addresses that it's trying to connect to, it then tries to find other devices on the network to route through. So,
yeah,
you know, we're in this new world. Okay, well, let's go on to the next caller.
Hi, caller. You're on the air with Garth and Rick.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple things about the California Public Utilities Commission and Frontier. I'll try and make it brief, but it's stuff I feel like I need to share. I got knocked off of Lifeline phone service, landline, by accident, and it took like 4 months to get back on. I had to call them up like 5 or 6 times, and they kept changing the reason why I couldn't get on. Finally, they said, oh, your paperwork's fine, but it was late, and I mailed it like a week before it was due. So you have to mail it to us again. It just went on like that. And but anyway, in the process of going through this ordeal, I went and looked at some of my old phone bills to see what they've done to my rates. And what I found was that in 2002, the base rate for Lifeline phone was $5.26. I think it is 2011, when Frontier took over, the base rate was $5.40. And then recently, when I got knocked off a Lifeline by accident, the base rate was $19.78. So basically, Verizon, over a period of 8 years, raised our rates about 0.3% a year, and Frontier's been raising our rates about 20.5% a year since 2011. A total of 266% rate increase just for Lifeline phone. This is just for, you know, people who need a little communication but don't want to spend a lot of money. So anyway, I just felt I needed to share that with you guys. And I tried to get an appointment with Mike McGuire so I can show him the paperwork and do a bunch of complaining. I have not been able to get through to
him yet. I think there might be nefarious crap happening in your life, but the truth is Lifeline is around $18 a month, so...
It was
maybe it's 19 now.
I know,
because you were grandfathered in, and that's the nefarious part. If you happen to get bumped off and you come back, you're going to pay the higher rate.
No. That's the rate before I got knocked off.
That was fine.
They've just been raising it steadily.
The $19 a month. But it is around $18,
$19
a month.
Yeah, no, and it's increased over the years, yes.
It was essentially level for 8 years, and then Frontier took over, and it's been going up 20.5% a month since 2011.
And you know what?
All I needed to say. Thanks for your show.
Thank you for your call. Yeah, that's honestly, Frontier, all the landlines, AT&T just
tried. And Verizon, too.
AT&T just tried to file the copper line that runs on a pole through the woods.
They're trying to get out of it now.
They would much rather try to switch you to some cell phone that doesn't work very well and hope for the best. They lose money on all this stuff. And particularly in this type of area where it's rural and where you actually probably do need a backup phone line because of fire and other emergencies. They would much rather not.
Yeah.
This
is greed making greed, but you know, Lifeline is a cool thing. And let's get on to the next caller.
Hi, caller.
Hey guys. Just a quick question or observation. This is kind of tech related here. Would you want to be one of those astronauts trying to get home on this Boeing Starliner thing?
I was thinking, I don't think I would want to have left home on the Boeing Starliner thing.
Yeah, especially when the titanium door could pop off, you know, it's just scary.
I'm sitting there going, you know, listening to the NASA guys today. Well, you know, just an abundance of caution and this, that, the other. And I'm going, I don't want to be Sonny or Butch or whoever those two poor astronauts are who they're going to.
And you know what? There's always a risk when you're doing that kind of stuff. And hands down to the astronauts who are part of it, because they're taking that risk, you know, and it's not like they're putting a dog on a shuttle, you know. So it's great. Okay. Boeing, though, has gotten so big and profits are so important. I think it is scary.
I watched a whole documentary about that, and they used to be the golden child of the industry. Like they were.
It was during the 45's administration. He touted them as so great.
Very, very, like, you know, like they did all their stuff internally, and it's when they merged with another company. I can't remember who it was, but where they started just, it was all about the bottom line, all about the shareholders.
Yeah, it is. And this is, you know, this is true whether you're Verizon or Boeing, you know, they're all, you know, doing it so that the CEOs make more money, you know. I mean, even hospitals do crazy stuff where, you know, it used to be you would go to the hospital, you get food for cheap. Now it's like you're in New York buying a burger, you know, if you go down to their
The last time I paid attention to the Boeing Starliner is when they were trying to launch it and they kept delaying stuff and things kept going wrong, and it was, I mean, it just one thing after another. Now they're up in space and they're delaying it, going, huh, what's wrong with this thing? We better troubleshoot it a little more just in case.
It's pretty crazy. And you know, sadly, in the case of Boeing, this was actually, I think it's mostly about them doing defense contract work. I mean, they could probably care less about making
the administrations.
Yeah, they could care less about making.
I want to get the next caller. Anyway, yeah, right, Boeing's a funny story. Yeah, thank you. Let's get the other calls on the air.
I think we're good on callers right now.
Are we?
Bye bye.
Yeah. Bye, guy.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah, no, pretty crazy.
Here's we're talking about all the stuff and you know, poor Boeing, and they'll figure it out. I've worked for them before and been there, and it's amazing the scale of what they're doing, because they were doing this before we had all this technology.
I couldn't believe what they did with that, the airliner, the Max.
That was bullshit. Yeah. You know, social networking is coming to everyone, and they've got this new AI thing where it's supposedly going to be people and AI, but it's called Butterfly, and you can go in and create a butterfly and it becomes you answer some questions and then it goes off and it learns and becomes a representation of you, and people interact, and it's kind of cool in a way. What do you think, Garth?
You got to catch me up, Rick. I can be my own butterfly.
It's a social network, and it's a new website called I got to get the exact name. Anyway, it's called Butterfly. So if you go look for Butterfly and social network, you'll find that it's like a chat bot, and you can create these butterflies, which are the versions of yourself or versions of whoever created them. And then they're AI that interact. And it seems kind of cool. You know, it's like a use of AI that maybe has some merit. What gets under my skin is that we're going too far with AI. And there are different political things, which, I mean, okay, we're going to talk about AI hell. But there are political things that are trying to put, like in Montana or Wyoming, they want to have an AI mayor. Okay.
What could be better?
No, right.
And so wait, really? Like that? The people want the AI mayor?
Well, it's trying to get on the ballot. And in Parliament in the UK, they're trying to put a candidate on that's an AI. And they're all talking about, oh, this could make it better and humanized. I want to say this is bull pucky, because the truth is, you know, if you put something on that's a robot, there's someone controlling the robot. There's someone feeding it, giving it intelligence. It's like the ideal candidate to have on the ballot.
I mean, it can read those giant bills, right? The 400-page omnibus bill. It could just go through it and read it, and it would understand it, right? I mean,
well, yeah, it might actually understand it. But it's just this idea where, you know, if you're going to have someone run for office in any capacity, no artificial computers.
Does that have to be? Is that even a thing? Do we have to like you know? There's a certain age you have to be president. We have to now say, okay, you have to be human.
It's also the accountability issue, because who's going to, you know, if the AI makes a decision and you all fall for it, and then you're going to say, oh, it was the robot that did it.
Impeach,
you know,
that
you can't
AI,
sue it. Mm-hmm. You can't do anything about it. It's not a person. So I'm not opposed to a candidate or a person in office using technology to make good decisions, or make decisions at least, you know, where they're, you know, testing it on the AI. But the idea to have an AI, a Max Headroom, be our, you know, candidate in any shape or form is ridiculous. And again, I have to put out there that it's the people who control the AI that feed it the information. I mean, right now we have a thing, it's called spoof or splat or something like that, where AIs make bad decisions. You know, you go to ChatGPT-4 and you can ask it 100 questions and 50% of them are going to be really wrong. You know what I mean? So the idea of us somehow getting behind an AI to be in political office in any shape or form,
I have a feeling is wrong. I would think that I don't think there's a strong groundswell of support for that, at least to my,
I hope not. Yeah. I mean, you know, I hope not, because, well, let's face it, the American public, 50% of them aren't too bright. You know, they're making decisions and supporting candidates that in any normal circumstance, they should see the red flags, and they don't. They justify it. So I think we're in trouble, and we're moving into this path where, again, the bottom line is no AI. Hey, well, let me throw out some tech tips, because I want people.
We're actually out of time for tech tips.
We got 3 minutes. We got 3 minutes. No. We're 26 minutes. Okay. So here it is. Oh, shucks. If you have Newsbreak, delete it as an app. It gives you false information. Watch out for deep fakes. Asus, if you have one of the routers, upgrade it. And Prime might give you free food delivery with G-Hub. Got it.
One day we'll actually have a show with more tech tips. But actually, it is 7:59 and 30 seconds. This has been Tech Mud right here on KMUD. We'll be back next month.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.